Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrar's Food Safety Inc. podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions relevant to both the food safety industry as well as cannabis and hemp. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjrfsi.com/webinars or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Hi, everybody. This is Brett McMillan with Perry Johnson Food Safety. I'm the Cannabis and Hemp Director, and we are honored and excited to have Dr. Trina Haza on today from the Veterinary Cannabis Society. Hi, Dr. Trina.
Hello. And
also from Green Nile Consulting. Dr. Trina and I kind of came across each other, I think probably 4 or 5 months ago, discussing the Veterinary Cannabis Society and how we could help and work with each other. And I was really excited to be able to lock in your valuable time, because as most people would agree or haven't seen out there, the issue of pets and cannabis and what's out there is really underserved in the industry right now. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. But tell us about VCS and Green Nile Consulting, and we'll dive into it.
Absolutely. So the Veterinary Cannabis Society is the first U.S.-based 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we're really focused on building awareness of cannabis as medicine for pets. So that's there are so many questions that pet parents, that veterinarians, and that the cannabis industry have. And so what we've done is we've created educational and advocacy portals so people can come and get information. The main goal of VCS is really to create these lasting solutions that ensure the safe use of cannabis in pets. And we accomplish it through education, advocacy, and promoting product standards. We believe in all of those very, very strongly. From the education side, we have a plethora of curated articles and podcasts and videos and written material, things that people can read and get really up-to-date, accurate information. We offer insight from the veterinary cannabis-related legislation. We are actively working in certain states to really get regulation changed so veterinarians have a voice, so they can comfortably guide pet parents regarding cannabis without the fear of disciplinary action through their veterinary medical board. So that's what's happened, is veterinarians they're struggling kind of in two ways. One is they don't necessarily have the education aspect of it. We didn't learn about cannabis medicine in veterinary school. So one of the things that VCS has started to do is we've developed a program where we've already started to outreach to veterinary schools and really say, hey, look, let's start at the veterinary student level. Once they're educated, they can come out and start talking to pet parents about, you know, cannabis in a safe manner, and not that I just don't have the education. We're clearly also doing education from the veterinary standpoint, the folks that are out there working every day. We're doing, right now we have a course that we're teaching through it. We're co-branding it with CIVT, which is one of the holistic schools that are teaching a variety of different holistic modalities. And one of them is cannabis that the other co-founder, Dr. Richter, and I are teaching together. And so we really believe in the education aspect. We offer scholarships for veterinary students so they can take that course, so they can get membership to VCS and really build the education part. But then there's also the importance of making sure veterinarians have the voice so they can actually do and guide the pet parents, and they're not afraid that they might get in trouble or lose their veterinary license. That just is really not fair, because that leaves the pet parents lost. They go to their veterinarian because that's who they trust, and we need to be there as a resource for the pet parents. So VCS really is here to educate, advocate, and really promote product standards so we can make sure the products that are available that we can stand by are the ones that are doing the appropriate testing and that are free of pesticides and residual solvents and heavy metals and things like that that could really hurt the pets that are taking them on a chronic basis.
That's amazing. Our local vet here in Michigan, without them knowing the industry that I'm in or what I do, they had no information you'll have to try it yourself or this, that, the other. Then it's amazing how little information is out there. For those folks that are listening in, on our end, it's a lot of product formulation and good manufacturing practices and things like that. But for more of a pet parent, I mean, what have you seen just on a basic level? For instance, our dog and some of our family pets, every 4th of July in northern Michigan around the lake, there's fireworks going off. 5, 10, 15 years ago, everybody said, oh, just the dogs will deal with it or they'll hide under the bed. I mean, what have you seen come about for things as simple as that? Or is it a tincture? Is it a gummy? How do you see pet parents trying to self-dose their dogs and sort of figure things out on their own? Or what have you come across on such a basic level like that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Absolutely. I think people are trying to figure it out on their own. They go to their veterinarian, just like you described, and they say, look, I don't know about it, or I can't speak about it. I'm too nervous to. So then what do? Is most times people go to, if they're in a legal state that has a dispensary, they go into a dispensary and they ask a bud tender, what am I supposed to do? Well, that's not really fair because a bud tender didn't go through 4 years of medical school, right? To really guide the pet parent. So what happens is they say, oh, I've used this one in my grandma, give it a shot. And what happens is they don't have the knowledge to understand the dosing strategies for veterinary patients. They also don't understand that there are certain toxins that are in a human product like xylitol and chocolate and raisins and things like that, that might be in a tincture or a treat or something like that. Chocolate, I mean, is we all know about chocolate, but I think most pet parents don't know about xylitol, which is an artificial sweetener found in lots of tinctures out there. And so you want to just be really, really careful to go to the bud tender and ask, because they're doing the best they can. They're not trying to hurt your pet, but they just don't have the veterinary knowledge. They shouldn't have it. They didn't go to school. And so I think Veterinary Cannabis Society is a great source to come to and get some questions or get some of your questions answered by reading through some of the documents. The other place you can go is on the Veterinary Cannabis site. There is Cannabis Society site. There is a directory of practitioners. And as members, veterinary members are joining, they have the option of joining and putting their information in the directory of practitioners. So you have access to who they are. That means that they're comfortable talking about cannabis. And obviously the goal of that is to really expand it globally. So if you are in Switzerland, there's a veterinarian that feels comfortable, not just within the States, right? And so we have veterinarians throughout the world that are putting their information in, Canadian veterinarians, whatever it may be. So wherever you are, the hope is you can find someone in your area that can give you information so you feel comfortable. And as the laws start to change within the States, I think veterinarians will really be forced to have this conversation with you because they're going to be legally able to do so. And so I think it's important that you are patient with your veterinarian and you ask them for support, even if you show them a product and say, is this safe? This is what I got from the local dispensary, or I got this from, a company online, right? I mean, I think that if you give me a moment, I want to talk a little bit about how do pet parents find products online that are safe, right? Because that is a big thing, right? If you're in a state that doesn't have a dispensary, you don't want to go to a dispensary. All CBD products are not created equally. We can say that, Brett, I think you can agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, there's been a lot of products out there, a lot of secret shopper type tests, and for just human-based CBD, the ranges are all over the place. Wrong dose, no CBD, heavy metals, pesticides, things of that nature. Obviously, there are trusted brands out there that do the right thing, that have a GMP certificate or use an accredited laboratory for their testing. So, and we'll get to those companies in a minute, because eventually they're going to be probably vetted by the VCS, where pet parents and producers want to have that stamp of approval because it's the right thing to do. So I highly agree with that. What have you seen for just what actually has worked with some of the clients that you've worked with through Green Nile? and some of the dog, I say dog general in general, but other pets, I'm sure dogs are majority of the pets you see. I'm assuming cats are maybe a close second, or horses. What types of products have worked? You know, is it in general, is it you know, if you get a 10 milligram dose of a gummy, right, and then most folks may cut that in half to try it, or a smaller micro dose. I mean, what's the general rule of thumb if you are going to try this, or what is wrong for you?
Yeah. So I would say, and this will answer your last question too, is tincture is usually the best way to go for pets.
Okay.
And the reason for that is it allows for appropriate and accurate dose initially and titration. So the problem with edibles like, you know, chews and biscuits and things like that is it's really hard to confirm that the dose is homogeneously through the entire treat. So when you cut it in half, how do I know that there's 10 milligrams, five on one side, five on the other, or is it going to be eight on one side and two on the other? And that's why my half didn't work, right? So I'm always really hesitant about using treats as the beginning part where I'm trying to find the pet's optimal dose. It doesn't seem scientifically the best way to do it. So what I'd always do is recommend trying to use a tincture to find the specific dose that works for the pet. So start low, go slow, right? Titrate slowly, find the dose that works best for the pet. And then if you decide, you say, oh my God, 5 milligrams of CBD really does the trick. It helps my dog not be so anxious. It helps them relax. It helps them when people come over, they're not so anxious. Or when I put them in the car to go to the vet, it really helps calm them down. Well, then perhaps switching to a treat that has 5 milligrams might do the trick, with the understanding that if you're using a product that's full spectrum, meaning it has some THC and other cannabinoids and terpenes and terpenoids, it's problematic when you switch to an isolate treat, because sometimes it's not CBD doing all the work by itself. It's some of those other cannabinoids and terpenes and other compounds. And so when you make that switch, you're like, uh-oh, the 5 milligrams isn't working. It's because it's having the boosting effect of some of the other compounds. So I want to keep that in mind. It's not an always equal switch, but in some cases it can work like that. So I oftentimes say, start with the tincture, find the pet's optimal dose. And it honestly, you ask, what's the dose? What's the magic dose? It'd be like asking a human cannabis physician, what's the dose for anxiety in a person? I mean, it could be 5 milligrams in one person. It could be 25 or 80 milligrams in another person, right? And so it's such a personalized medicine approach with cannabis that it's I always believe it's based off of the genetics of that pet. It's based off of the endocannabinoid system tone, right? The endocannabinoid tone of the pet. And just like it is in humans, there are some pets that run much more anxious. There are some pets that run a little bit more calm. And so how much CBD or THC or other cannabinoids or terpenes you expose to the pet is so unique. And you'll find that some pets need a very little bit of just to balance that endocannabinoid system. And you need a lot more in other pets to really kind of jam it into place and keep them in a more steady state of calmness, right? If we're talking about anxiety here or something.
Sure. Like that. So most of your clients that you've worked with, are they coming to you because of a pet that has anxiety, or is it more something serious where it's more of a something terrible like a cancer, or they're recuperating from getting, you know, hit by a car or some sort of an accident? You know, what are some I guess success stories or things that really got your wheels turning on this, that, you know, made you such a firm believer in cannabis for pets versus just the veterinary sciences in general?
Great question. So I actually am a board certified veterinary oncologist, and I did conventional oncology for a period of time, maybe 5 years or so. And then I realized that I wasn't making as big of an impact as I needed or I felt like I could. There was a part of my practice that I felt was missing, and it was really the integrative aspect, integrating some of the holistic modalities. So I ended up getting certified in Chinese herbal medicine as well, and combined Chinese herbs, nutrition, medicinal mushrooms, and cannabis into my cancer practice. And what I realized is, as I was probably 10 years into my career, is that people were coming to me to sit down and have a conversation about their pet's cancer. And probably 30 minutes of the hour conversation was taken by cannabis conversation. And so I thought, well, there are all these other veterinary oncologists in California, in Southern California, where I was practicing. There's no one else talking about cannabis and some of these holistic options. Why don't I start a company, which is how Green Nile Incorporated came about, to really focus on cannabis and some of the holistic options for cancer patients. But what ended up happening was, why did I only have to do cancer, where there's so many other disease processes that are cannabis responsive? And so I opened it up to anxiety cases, seizure cases, pain cases, inflammatory cases, as well as cancer cases. Majority of what I see, I don't know, maybe 60%, 70% of what I see are cancer cases, which is what I honestly probably enjoy the most because of my background, right? Like, it just comes natural. I can pull all the literature and figure out, oh, look, there's cannabinoid receptors on these cell types. And so it might make sense that we use this cannabinoid, or it looks like TRPM8 inhibition could be really helpful for this particular cancer because TRPM8 is overexpressed. So let's use CBG in this case, or let's use this combination of cannabinoids and terpenes to really help try to get anti-tumor effect, but always also focus on quality of life, right? And so how do we use those two pillars when we use cannabis to treat some of these cases? And so much of my conversation is really around kind of the pillars of why I believe cannabis can be helpful for some of these patients. But it's not just cancer. I mean, I had a case of a patient just a few weeks ago where it came to me from a neurologist and an internal medicine specialist because it had a bleeding disorder. And when the dog cut its leg, it was bleeding into its skin and into its muscle. So the legs swole up really big. And what happened is it developed neurogenic pain. I mean, really severe pain. And it reminded me almost like a phantom limb pain type of disorder, where it was like pins and needles is the way the owner kind of described how the dog looked. It was biting at its foot and licking at its foot and kind of quickly look back at its leg. And well, they had tried everything. They tried all the pharmaceuticals. They tried so many different things to try to help. And what happens is they came to me. It was referred to me by the neurologist. And they were like, look, we tried all what we know from the conventional standpoint. Can Dr. Hazzah help? And so this woman was really desperate, looking for something to help to keep the dog comfortable. And so we talked about things like how cannabis can help change the even just the pathways within the brain that perceive pain, and how we can help with an anti-inflammatory effect, and we can help with neurogenic or neuropathic pain, but really using the right combination and the right ratio of cannabinoids and so forth. And we also talked about things, other modalities like acupuncture and even hyperbaric oxygen therapy and things like that. So they ended up starting the cannabis product. At first, they didn't see anything, and I did the normal, like, okay, titrate the dose. Remember, we typically start subtherapeutic because THC is our dose-limiting cannabinoid, and we need THC for this particular case. I strongly believe THC is going to help. And so they slowly increased the dose. And then I'd start to get messages, oh, she's not biting as much anymore. She seems to be ignoring it a little bit more. And in time, what happened is the leg started to actually shrink, and she started to use the leg a little bit more. She started to have feeling back in the leg. And I just received a message a few weeks ago, like 2 weeks ago or something, saying, hey, we're off all of the pharmaceutical medication. Can we stop cannabis? And I was like, yeah, give it a few weeks, just because you stopped all the pharmaceuticals, give it a few weeks. And then I want you to actually almost taper it down, because the body has gotten so used to having cannabinoids in the body that I do believe you could stop it. Now the leg looks normal. Leg is being used like a normal leg. Go ahead and, you know, stop it. But let's be smart about how we do so. And so they were able to kind of slowly get off of it. And like, she actually reached out about her other dog that has like aggression and anxiety issues, and we're going to do a consult with that one. And she's psyched, you know, with how well the dog has done. And I have certainly cancer cases that have really responded well also. And so anyway, that's a really, that was the most recent one that I want to bring up that I thought really had some good positive feedback on.
That's great feedback. And when anybody, a human or a pet, gets cancer, it's terrible. And we've had some dogs in our family get cancer, and it really makes you wonder, because, you know, humans are eating all kinds of junk all day long, drinking all kinds of things all day long from different containers all day long. But most dogs have a bowl of food and a bowl of water and maybe a couple treats. And you wonder how would a dog get cancer? You know, it's horrible from the environment. There's so many other factors, and it's probably a whole nother podcast to discuss, but it's such an isolated situation with the dog, and somehow they can still get cancer. And so, you know, it's amazing that you and other veterinarians have come to think about cannabis and CBD as a way to help this, because there's also the corporate part of all this, the corporate pharmaceuticals, the corporate pills, the corporate medicines, which obviously work, or they wouldn't be in play in the veterinary world. But have you found yourself sort of shying away from some of those things now and thinking more about cannabis, or is it a mix of the two, that certain things work and certain things don't, and that, you know, cannabis hasn't officially proven itself? Or what is your take on that?
I mean, I think it's based off of the disease, right? So some diseases, I think cannabis and holistic modalities overall can do the trick, and you probably don't even need to go the conventional route. And others, you really need conventional with more of an integrative approach from the holistic side. I think, you know, certain cancers, for instance, I'll have consults with clients that say, like, really, I'm unsure if I want to do chemotherapy or not. And I'll, you know, I say, look, I can't make any formal recommendations right now. However, I can tell you, based off of the long experience I've had with thousands of cancer patients, and the research and literature that's out there, we know that cannabis by itself isn't probably going to be able to do a lot. However, when combined, those are the ones that really do the best, right? And there are other cases where we can do, you know, a pill or something that might be conventional, not just inject, not something like injectable chemo, something that invasive that an owner may not want to do, and then combine it with cannabis. And I've seen a synergistic or additive effect when that happens. And then, you know, I think sometimes too, it's just trusting the pet parent, right? I mean, they, you know, I think we all know as pet parents what's right for our pet. Right. Sure. We have this gut feeling. We know this as parents, right? Human parents, dog parents, whatever we want to call ourselves. We have a gut feeling of, is our dog or cat or pet going to be able to undergo this therapy and still maintain a quality of life? Is this something that I believe in or not? And so, there is no forcing to do one thing or the other. I think a lot of times it's going with your gut feeling. And then I'm here as just a resource to provide, what is the typical outcome when X, Y, and Z happens? But there's never a guarantee with any of it. You could do the best and the most aggressive modalities, and you still have a shortened, lifespan or reduced quality of life. You can do holistic, and some might say, well, we don't have any evidence this works. Well, guess what? I've seen it go, these pets go years and years, and people say, oh my God, I can't believe this pet's still alive, right? So there isn't a guarantee with any of it, but we use science to help guide all of us, right, as to what to do for our pets. And I think that as veterinarians, we absolutely use evidence-based medicine and science to support us. And, you know, to say that there's not enough research in cannabis, that's true. From a clinical perspective, we need definitely more clinical trials. But there is research out there. There's tons, hundreds of, you know, publications. And if I'm talking just about cancer now, there's over 100 publications on just CBD and THC on the anti-tumor effects. Most of these are in vitro studies, right, in petri dishes or preclinical studies, very few clinical trials, some clinical trials, certainly, but none in veterinary medicine. The veterinary medicine trials are all in vitro trials at this point, and some animal preclinical studies, of course. So I think we just have to extrapolate as best as we can. But to say there's nothing out there, I don't think that's fair to say. I think that we, just like in other ways, we oftentimes extrapolate and use real-world evidence to help support how we practice medicine. Why should we not do the same for veterinary cannabis medicine?
Absolutely. Do you think, I mean, where does the United States stand in veterinary research for this compared to other countries around the globe? I know you have other international clients and you know, through your experiences, are there other countries out there that are a little more advanced at this for trying to figure things out for pets? Or is it a global scenario where everybody is sort of trying to learn about this together and sharing information?
I mean, I think a lot of times we're all trying to share it, but I think it's the laws and the regulations in different countries that help dictate how far you can go in cannabis research, right? So I think Israel appears to be more open because I know people are doing some veterinary trials there. I think that we're getting some veterinary trials out of Italy. Definitely Latin America has been very open to trials there. All the trials in the United States have been hemp-derived cannabis trials, more isolate, CBD isolates, but most are just CBD dominant, hemp derived. And then in Canada, they've done some trials looking at, you know, even just THC dominant and so forth for safety and dosing trial studies. So I think, I think that we're slowly getting to it, but the best way for us to really start breaking through and getting more knowledge, Australia actually has a company that's doing some trials as well, but the best way to break through and really get as much knowledge as we can is to share the information.
Right.
Having societies like VCS, Canada has a similar type of society. We all work together to say, what have you learned? Latin America, it's something that I did a panel conversation with them a few months ago, and they shared a really interesting project that they did on an elephant that had
that's a pretty big dose.
It wasn't as big, but they saw improvement. And so it's clearly not just a body surface area thing or a body weight area. Cannabis works so differently. You don't even have to use, you could use a dose in a horse that might be that you would use for a large dog and see reduction in anxiety and things like that. So super interesting stuff that I've learned from people in other countries and what they're doing. So I think having a forum and having an area where we can all share are what we see from real world evidence, but also start getting publications out there, right? Getting action. So that's where doctors are going to look at it. Veterinary doctors are going to look at it and say, oh, this is a published trial. This is a published trial in a peer-reviewed journal. I'm going to listen to this. They're not all listening to anecdotal stories. Certainly, it's meaningful when you start having evidence that it's, you know, supporting that it works for arthritis. And there's certainly been, that's probably the most the most evaluated disease process in veterinary medicine that has been published is osteoarthritis in dogs. There's been probably, I want to say five publications on osteoarthritis and CBD dominant or CBD based products and showing efficacy. One was the only one that didn't show efficacy, the others all did. And it was pretty standard doses, you know, like they were all anywhere between 1 and 2-ish mgs per kg BID dosing of a CBD product. And what's interesting is if you look at the studies and you look at the products they use, they're not all the same products. So one has CBDA, one has some THCA, but no CBDA. And so it just shows you it's not one cannabinoid doing all of it, right? I mean, you don't have to have the exact same one. I think there's scientific really kind of narrative behind why certain cannabinoids should do what they do. But as you can see in these trials, it was a CBD, it was an isolate. One of them showed an isolate product actually helped arthritis. And so, I mean, there's stuff, it's all over the place, but it's nice to at least see trials being done for sure.
Absolutely. So I know you've got some other things coming up here and we'll probably have a few more minutes. tell us about what you see on the horizon for VCS. I know Perry Johnson and VCS are going to work together on some things, but you know, for product validation and to get kind of the VCS stamp of approval. How do you see that working for VCS, and what do you see coming down the pipeline there over the next year for folks that want to get involved, and how you think as a program this is all going to help?
No, that's a great question. I think the more programs we develop, like exactly the product seal of approval is going to be huge. So pet parents and veterinarians can just go onto VCS site and say, hey, you know, is this one that's put under, is this in the list of VCS approved products? It doesn't mean that if it's not on there, it's a terrible product. They just may not have gone through the process yet, right? And so, sure. You know, but it at least gives a little assurance to folks that don't have the time to really research the reputation of the company and look at certificate of analysis. And because that all takes time to do. And so the hope is we make it easy so people can just go on and look and say, okay, this is one of the ones that are approved. So let's, like, we can move forward. We feel comfortable moving forward in the safety aspect of it. We can't prove efficacy clearly, but we can at least try to prove safety as much as possible. So that's a big one. We're also working on doing some real world evidence kind of survey trials with some companies, really trying to prove that certain cannabinoids do what they say they're supposed to do, right? And so that helps certain companies really be able to market and say, hey, look, 80% of dogs that took this had relaxation or whatever it may be. So we're going to start working on that as well. We have that scholarship program really trying to educate veterinary students. One of the other big things we're trying to do is actually reach out to vet schools themselves and embed cannabis within the curriculum. So that's tremendous. There are so few medical schools, right, that have any information even in the human end of it. There's some information on toxicity and pharmacology, but we really want to get into veterinary schools and start teaching about all of those aspects, not just in toxicology class or pharmacology class, but even in the small animal or the large animal classes when they're getting out there in the real world. How do they use cannabis? How do they implement it into practice and so forth? Because as the laws really start to change, and that's another thing that VCS is constantly working on, is really trying to change legislation so we can get veterinarians to be able to have a voice, right? And so that's, we're continuing that this full year and really trying to gain membership from pet parents, from veterinary professionals, from the industry. Finding corporate sponsorship is really important so we can maintain, you know, the programs running, right? And be able to put out there the partnerships that we have, like with Perry Johnson and other great organizations that are doing the right thing, that we share similar missions. I mean, that's super, super important, because without us all working together, I think it's going to just take so much longer, right? So we really need to work together. And from, you know, really getting more people to join so we can get the directory of practitioners to widen so people know who they can go to when they have questions and they feel lost. And that's another part of it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Trina. This has been very, very educational. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. I know it's going to lead to other great things for pet parents and folks in the industry that are already in the cannabis and hemp space, but you know, have thought about getting into the pet industry, because it is a business. But there's also an ethical way to be involved in that business, and VCS and Green Nile can definitely help with that. So with that, I just want to say thank you one more time. And for those of you that are tuning in or are going to be listening to this later as our podcast, if you will, if you would like more information on VCS or Green Nile, obviously they're out there online. You can also go to our website at pjrfsi.com. And we want to say thank you very much and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.